What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 202 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. We are coming to you on a fantastic Thursday evening. This is my second podcast of the night. I was actually just on the Destiny Community Podcast. Now, obviously, this is Massive Breakdowns. We're going to be talking about the big news, the Stasis PvP changes, the Stasis balance changes, coming out sooner than I think anyone really expected. Basically, you know, next week, like the 23rd. I guess not. Is it next week? It's 2 weeks from now, two resets from now?
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Or is it? Yeah, 2 weeks from now. So still way sooner than anyone expected. So we're going to be talking about all that stuff. There are some other things, some other just random balance changes that aren't Stasis, but the Stasis ones are the biggest ones. So we're kind of going to be breaking down the numbers for you, what we think it's going to, the effect it's going to have. And then we're also, we asked for some listener questions to kind of tack on to the tail end of the podcast. So we're going to be talking about some stuff like that, like potentially light subclass balances and things. But first, let's get the introductions out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined tonight by Kit Kutcha. And how are you doing this evening, Kit?
Well, Mercules, I'm doing pretty darn well. So I've wisely chosen to lump my my seasonal challenges together so I can knock... I just knocked out a whole bunch of Gambit stuff today, which felt... great, because I have only played a little bit of Gambit this season, and I think I'm gonna see what else I can kind of string together here as they continue to roll these out. I really like that they added those in. They feel a little more accessible than Triumphs do. Triumphs are like these long term kind of slogs sometimes, or these things that just sort of happen in the course of play, and it's not even worth trying to chase them because they just are gonna happen anyway. And so I'm enjoying the way that they've set these up. So yeah, I'm good. I'm enjoying my Destiny time right now. How about you?
I was enjoying the challenges until this week's Gambit challenge came about, and it's 5 ranks. Not micro ranks, like the full
That's
ranks.
That's a lot of ranks.
I'm 3 ranks in, and I'm like wanting to be just incredibly done with Gambit. Like, you know, if it had been Strikes, it would have been one thing. If it had been Crucible, it would have been one thing. But like Gambit, even with the triple infamy or the double infamy or whatever it is, it's just like really a struggle for me to do long form. So basically what's happening is I'm trying to grind out like, you know, 5 or 6 games a day. And I'm hoping that by the end of this week, I'll have been able to get it done. But man, it is not super fun. And what sucks is I'd finished every single challenge except for this one this season. And this is the only one that's taking me like an absurd amount of time to do. It's just like such a weird outlier to me.
Gambit's, for me, playing 3 to 4 matches of Gambit is fun. And in the fourth one, I start to be like, okay, I want to do something else. And that's, I feel like that's about the limit for me. And I just can't force myself to slog through it.
Yeah, it's hard. At least it's not 3 rounds like it was before. Yeah. At least it's just the 1 round.
I will say I love the way that they've blended the modes.
Yeah, so do I. It's a lot better than the old version of Gambit. I would still entirely remove Gambit from the game given the opportunity to. Like, I really wouldn't be too upset about it. So, yeah. Outside of that, we also have some housekeeping to get to, I believe. We do have a new Patreon, or patron for the Patreon, correct?
We do. Yes, we have some thank yous. As always, massive shout out to ZenSoCal and Shazzle for their ongoing sponsorship of the podcast. These two generous guardians go above and beyond, as do all of our ongoing patrons.
Shazzle was giving me shit. He asked a question on the Destiny Community Podcast about tank tops.
Oh!
And I was like, oh, I see how it is, Shazzle. You bring the tank top shade into the DCP lobby. I see how it is.
For the record, he's wearing a tank top right now.
And I was wearing a tank top last night for firing range, too.
I don't think he even changed tank tops in between the last podcast and this one.
I actually did.
Whoa.
Oh, you mean in between DCP? No, I didn't.
Oh, yeah.
I wore the same tank top for them. I thought you meant in between last night and this night. Well, look, here's the truth, guys. I said on DCP, I'm in my pajamas right now. I wear a tank top at night. So what's happening is I get ready for bed before I do the podcast. so that after the podcast, when I'm freaking exhausted, I can literally just basically go straight to bed and fall asleep, and I don't have to do anything. So my tank top that you always see me wearing is because I'm in my pajamas at night, and I wear a tank top to go to sleep. So, mystery solved.
You know, that's one of those things that I just never even bothered to question, but now I know. Possibly too much.
Well, it's because people kept pointing it out to a certain extent, and it's like, you know, it's not like I'm just wearing a tank top all the time, nonstop. I would say I wear a tank top for a solid 16 hours a day, but not all the time. Not all the time.
You know, I feel like you, well, and I guess that's because you were in podcast t-shirts. So when we hung out for the old Guardian Cons, back when conventions and social gatherings were a thing, y'all remember those days. Many moons ago.
Years. In antiquity. Yes. In prehistory.
Yes, when I was a young lad. I was going to say, you didn't wear a tank top once, but I was like, oh wait, we were wearing podcast t-shirts so people could identify us since we are only voices.
Yeah, and also I don't really wear tank tops like going out to do stuff, right? Like I wear tank tops around the house, I wear tank tops to the gym or to the beach, but like I wouldn't wear a tank top if I was going to a convention or something like that. I'd wear a normal t-shirt with sleeves, like, you know, that's like fair. A not savage person, but
that's fair.
Anyways, we're
way off topic now.
I thought we were talking about patrons or something. How did this happen?
It's Shazzle's fault. He's infected.
I blame Shazzle. Yeah.
He's infected this podcast as well. And we're grateful for it. We have a new patron to say thank you to. Now, this is going to be difficult because the text on the website, you know, it's normalized, right? So it's like just a regular E, but I feel like there could be an apostrophe there. I don't know which way to go. So this could be Gagne215, or it could be Gagne215. Either way, welcome to the crew. Tell me in Discord which one it is. Actually, I should have just messaged you before the podcast. In my defense, I was drinking a lot of rye whiskey and forgot.
He actually already posted in the Spicy Brews channel.
Boy, see,
I recognized the name.
Now I just have no excuse. Well, anyway, regardless, welcome, and tell me which one it is, or if there's a third pronunciation that I don't know about. I'm curious. It could be. Last name. I'm always curious about last names that are difficult to pronounce, because I've heard so many pronunciations of my own last name that, like, it's just like this game. Like, can you get it right? So, there we are.
All right, cool. We also have a couple of podcast reviews. So, the first one is from Chuckles Z Clown from Great Britain.
Hey!
He said...
Also a new patron.
Is he?
Last week, you know.
Oh yeah, I do remember that, and I'm pretty sure last week I did make mention of the fact that our aggregator pulls international reviews.
This is why the delay.
Because I think this one was actually from them. But anyways, it says what's not to like? 5 stars. Two folks passionate about the game, enjoying a friendly chat as they chew over numbers, game design, and the difficulties of keeping the Destiny community happy. The critique is thoughtful, constructive, and although they're not always agreeing with each other, it's always a respectful discussion. Oh, and the tangents, like so many tangents. I always finish listening to the podcast with a smile on my face. Sad to see them wrap and eagerly looking forward to the next discussion. That is a really wholesome and wonderful podcast review. I very much appreciate that. I think that podcast review also brings a smile to my face.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's nice to know that the tangents are appreciated because they are inescapable.
There are a lot of tangents. Just a lot. But... Anyways, the next one up is from Almen, I'm not 100% sure how to pronounce that. It says, good podcast for all Destiny fans, 5 stars. The chemistry between hosts is exceptional. Both boast a vast expanse of knowledge on the game, which lets me justify the amount of mispronunciations that occur. All jokes aside, as a player with thousands of hours in the game, I highly recommend a listen, as I find myself still learning about the game we love via this podcast. If I'm allowed to, I'd like to try to recommend that you use Terraba. I have played with the 750 RPM SMG since before the buff, and now this gun is a staple in my inventory. Yes, the switch weapon lose buff mechanic is not the best, but please, it is an amazing gun now. I can't say I have not used it myself, but I have been deleted by players who have the Teraba buff up in PvP. I think it brings the TTK down to like a third of a second or something insane.
I've heard some rumblings about this gun. So I might have to go there.
We spoke about it last week when we talked about extraordinary rendition, but I have found SMGs to be, with the right role, now verging on usable. My biggest problem I have with SMGs is that I don't think they do enough damage for the limited range that they have and for the difficulty of control that they have, right? Teraba does not have that issue. When the perk is up, it does all the damage. And so although I have not used it myself, I'm thinking maybe it is about time to break it out of collections and give it a shot.
Well, I will have to actually make a note, because that I'm always looking for a new gun to spice things up. So,
although that would require me to not be using Dead Man's Tail,
I mean that's rough,
which is unlikely at any point in time in the near future. Although I have been finding that if I've had anything to drink, or if I'm really tired, I cannot use Dead Man's Tail Hipfire to like save my life. The problem that I'm noticing is that the reticle, and I have a hypothesis why it does this, but the reticle in Halo Reach would turn red when you were going to get a hit when you pulled the trigger, right? So like if the reticle was red, you could pull the trigger and you'd get a hit, right? Like that was kind of the indicator that the target was in the aim assist, you know, diameter. It does the same thing with Dead Man's Tail, but it is not a guaranteed hit. When the target is within a certain diameter, the reticle turns red, but the target can be within that diameter and you'll still miss, right? So I'm so used to looking at the reticle and waiting for it to turn red and then pulling the trigger when it's red, because that's what I did in Halo Reach, and that is not the way it works in this. And so you have to ignore the reticle color and focus on the little tiny reticle in the center, which is the actual diameter that you can hit a target that's within it, right? And that is like, anytime I'm tired and I lose focus, I only see the color red, and I'll fire three or four shots and miss every single shot. Because it's like, it's the most frustrating thing. So if I'm tired and I can't focus, I like can't use the hipfire part of the gun. I have to just like ADS it.
I don't even know what to say.
It's a lot, but DMT is not what we're talking about. Although I could talk about it for an entire another episode. No, what we're going to talk about is stasis. So I'm kind of surprised to see. I'm kind of surprised to see these coming so soon. I thought for sure it was going to be next season that we saw this. Even though we talked about weeks ago that the changes that needed to be made were very, very obvious. And I think going down the list, when you look at them, the changes they made were the obvious checks off the box. So what they say about it is they made some targeted adjustments in season 12. They want to see how they landed before making any more. Now that we've had several weeks to analyze the data, this is me adding in here, they saw what pretty much everyone saw, which is there were some additional pain points that needed to be addressed.
Oh, that was paraphrasing? That wasn't word for word?
Sadly, no. Oh. But they said our goal with these changes is to reduce some of the frustrations when fighting against stasis subclasses in Crucible, but maintain their power in PvE wherever possible. In an interesting turn of events, they are almost entirely separating the PvE and PvP balance in this, which is something that we have never seen before. And part of me believes that it's because it seems like maybe there is something about the Darkness subclasses that they built into them that enabled them to be tuned separately. Because if you'll notice when we go through the list here, every nerf to a stasis subclass is not nerfed in PvE, but then they nerfed Chaos Reach universally.
Yeah.
It was not separated out.
Right. That's a really good point.
Yeah. So
I mean, we know that they built the stasis classes from the ground up, like brand new. These are just completely different in structure from the light subclasses. So that would certainly have been very wise of them to plan ahead for just this scenario.
So start with the Revenant, because that's up at the top. Shatter Dive, they are removing the damage resistance from Shatter Dive, which I think all of us can agree never should have been there in the first place. Even myself, who uses Shatter Dive a significant amount, I agree, never should have been there in the first place. And they're also adding a 4-second cooldown between activations of Shatter Dive, What that's going to do in practice, it's not going to have a tremendous effect. I don't know that there's a ton of shatter dive spam where you're like doing it multiple times, and 4 seconds isn't a tremendously long time as far as cooldowns go. It's kind of similar to Icarus Dash. However, what is going to be a bummer for me is some of the time I shatter dive too soon and I miss the crystals because they nerf the radius of shatter dive's explosion. So I miss the crystals and then I have to do it a second time. And this is going to prevent me from doing that almost in its entirety. So I'm going to have to be a lot more deliberate with my slams.
I was going to say, I feel like the places where this is going to have the largest effect is actually in PvE. Since this particular change, and I suspect that it's because this is not coming from the subclass, but from the... not fragment. I keep wanting to say fragment. Aspect. Yeah. That perhaps the aspect they weren't able to, since it's kind of granting us an ability that can be used anywhere. I wonder if they were not able to make this particular change divided. But I feel like I see a lot more people spamming Shatter Dive in PvE than I do in the Crucible or anywhere else for that matter. Like, just running Battlegrounds, I see a ton of Shatter Dive spam.
It might also be that they didn't want to change timings in between PvE and PvP, because like the other stuff that they change is like damage amounts, right? Or like how far the... I mean, we'll talk about it here in a second because this is where it begins, right? So Withering Blade, obviously the Shuriken, the base damage against players has dropped from 90 to 65, which is funny. They pretty much just reset it close to where it was before they buffed it in the last balance patch. PvE damage is unchanged, right? Like, so that Shuriken, that's not going to feel really different between PvP and PvE, right? Next thing, the slow stacks that it applies to the players, it's a 60 now, although it displays a 6, and they're bringing it down to 40, so what we would see now is 4, right? PvE, they're not changing it. Well, you don't see the stacks that it applies to something in PvE anyways, right? So you're not going to notice the difference. And then they also decrease the tracking range of Withering Blade after it impacts a player. Right now it's 12 meters, now it's going down to 8. That's not changing in PvE, right? So like the differences that they made there, like it's the Withering Blade isn't really going to feel super different in PvP and PvE. Whereas if you put a cooldown on Shatter Dive in PvP but not in PvE, it would feel different because of how often you could activate it, right? I think they're still trying to keep the feel of stuff the same in between PvP and PvE. Most of the stuff that they changed was like numbers wise stuff on this.
Yeah, I mean that's entirely likely as well.
But as far as these changes go, I mean, I think they're good ones.
Yeah, as a Revenant main at this point, I'm fine with these changes. I don't think that these are going to be any kind of huge imposition on my ability to use the class.
No, I mean they're obvious, right? Like the Shatter Dive changes needed, both of those probably needed to happen. Decreasing Withering Blade damage needed to happen. Decreasing the slow stacks probably needed to happen because I didn't like that you could double. I didn't like, even though I could do it, I didn't like that you could double freeze Shuriken people, right? And the reason why is because when I had it happen to me, I felt extremely frustrated because there's basically no counterplay. When I did to someone else, I never felt like I did anything skillful. I felt like I just double spammed a button and froze them for like 4 seconds, right? So that's how you know when something is probably a little bit overpowered. When not only when it's used against you do you feel frustration, but when you use it yourself and it's like, well, I froze someone, but at the same time, it's like, I also kind of just bounced 2 Shurikens off a wall and it tracked immediately to the closest person, you know? So I'm glad they're doing that. The decreased target acquisition of Withering Blade, I'm a little bummed about because I liked that it bounced from like target to target. And I think that maybe with it doing less slow and less damage, it would be enough. Because I really like, just like I like the Sentinel Shield, I like being able to bounce these things off of stuff. Like I would even take it doing less damage to keep that target acquisition.
Yeah, that, I mean, 4 meters is a pretty good chunk.
Yeah, cutting it by 33%.
We do have two of them. And it still makes it really easy to apply slow, and slow is still a really strong effect.
Yeah, a little bit of a disappointment. They didn't do anything about slowing's multitude of effects that it applies, multitude of debuffs that it applies to people.
Like, a big reason that this doesn't, like, bum me out, like, even, like, the slow stacks being reduced down so it can't auto-freeze, is that I wasn't using it that way anyway. I was just using it as two separate slow effects. I could slow someone and then kill them fairly easily, and then slow someone else, kill them fairly easily, run around with Frosties on, and I already have another blade up, and you can just keep doing that until I make a mistake or somebody outplays me. You know, which happens a lot, but hey, I still got a bunch of much easier kills out of it than I might have otherwise, so slow is strong. It doesn't need a whole lot of extra.
Yeah, I agree with that. Next up, moving on to the Titan, the Behemoth. This one's getting a lot of changes, specifically to the super. For Glacial Quake, they're removing the AoE freeze, and this is actually the biggest difference between PvP and PvE, I think, out of any of these changes. They're removing the AoE freeze against players on supercast only in PvP. It will still freeze PvE enemies on cast. This is the biggest thing where it's like, mechanically, this is different. However, as a player, the way you use it and how it feels to use it, I feel like still stays the same, right? Like, in terms of how it feels to use the super, it still feels the same. It just happens to be in PvE, will freeze all the enemies around you, right?
It's definitely going to be, I think, a difference, right? It used to be that you could sort of panic use it to freeze everyone and then get a kill or two. You can still do that in PvE. Now it may take a little bit more deliberation. You may have to actually think about when you're going to activate it. It can't sort of be a get out of trouble button anymore.
They really threw the kitchen sink at these supers initially. Like, I'm starting to think about like what must have been going through their head when they were designing a super, and like you've got the other supers and they have one to two things, right? Like, they have a light attack and a heavy attack, right? And like, that's what they have. And you know, you activate it and you have your initial activation and a light and a heavy. Some of them don't even that. Some of them just have the one, right? Some of them maybe have a third if they have a movement ability. With Titan supers, they were like, we're going to give it an AoE on cast. We're going to give it insane movement ability. We're going to give it crazy duration, super fast movement speed, damage resistance, a crazy heavy attack, and a great light attack. They just like threw the sink at this, and they were like, we are just going to give it everything. Every good thing a super can have, we're going to give it to this.
I will say that we still, in fairness, we still thought that this was the worst of the supers when it first came out, because it was very difficult for people to use, and
it was way easier to freeze people when it first came out.
Yeah.
This super was much, much worse when cold snap grenades were freezing for 4 seconds.
That's true.
And when the warlock melee could instant freeze for long periods of time out of anything, right? Like, this super was pretty much useless when the warlock melee could just shut it down, or a grenade could shut it down almost immediately.
And when, I suppose, when the warlock super was in its original full strength,
that was actually broken.
It was certainly a much worse comparison at that point.
Yeah, multiple things happened. It got the No Land Beyond treatment, where other stuff got nerfed down underneath it. And then secondarily, people figured out how to use the movement, and that was really like the switch flipping, was people figured out how to use the movement, and they unlocked the aspects that were like, you can slide for 50 meters at twice the speed and do these other horrible things. God, Behemoths, man. Ugh. Well, regardless, they're taking some of that stuff away. They're bringing the damage resistance from 60% down to 50%. That's huge. My personal opinion has been that no roaming super should ever have more than 50% damage resistance. It's going to be a big deal bringing it down to 50%. 60% tank mode. 50% not so bad. Using Shiver Strike while on Glacier Quake will now cost more than double the previous amount of energy. It used to cost 3%. Now it costs 7%. And if you use a Shiver Strike into a Heavy Slam, what it used to be able to do is it used to cancel the Shiver Strike, and you would just use the Slam Energy, which meant that it was basically free to use it to transfer around. Now it costs energy for both of them. So as long as you use it at all, it pulls the energy, and then when you do a Slam, it pulls the energy from there too. So what it's going to do is it's basically going to, like, these changes are going to make it to where if you're doing anything other than just running around, it's going to dramatically cut into your super uptime.
Yeah, so the mobility will still be, it'll still be available, but it will require some more judicious use. And it will certainly, you know, I think the combination of losing the freeze and the increased costs of mobility are going to force players to get a little more creative and to be a little bit more thoughtful about when they activate. You can't count on being able to find a bunch of people to kill just activating this wherever you happen to be. You won't necessarily have time if you have to cross the map. I mean, you might. You still might. But it's going to be a little... it's going to be a little harder to pull it off. And I think that's good. I think forcing people to think about what they're doing, especially now that people have had time to get used to the abilities and how they work, I think it's going to work out just fine. And the damage resistance had to come down.
Yeah.
It more than 50% really is too much.
And they keep doing it. They keep doing it over and over.
Yeah.
Like Hammer Titans and Taken King came out at 60% and it was too high. Nova Warp is at 60%. Spectral Blades is at 60%. Like, it's never good to have more than 50%.
And Viz Spectral Blades was actually higher. Like, it was, you were invisible and also tankier.
Yeah, it was like 62.5% or something like that. Yeah,
I was
just
like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, I used it, but...
yeah, of course. But, I mean, I didn't because... ain't no meta. Ain't no meta slave. I'm not about that life. But yeah, so I actually think that this is going to be a relatively major change. Like, I don't know that the super is going to go to being bad. I would hazard a guess that it will not, that it will still be quite good. But I think it's going to make players make the choice. Like, I don't see anyone in front of me. I can burn some energy to Shiver Strike to get to them, or I can run and keep my normal uptime, but I'm planted to the ground. It takes me a little bit longer, right? And of course, players are probably going to choose to Shiver Strike because it's just the fastest way to get there. But what's going to be nice is that it's going to pull energy from them now. So every time they do that, every time they try to traverse the map, their uptime on the super is going to decrease and decrease and decrease and decrease. And I'm really, really happy to hear that. So I think these changes, I think 2 for 2 right now, Revenant and Behemoth, the changes that they're making are just absolutely fantastic for the state of the game as a whole.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely my opinion that these insanely long supers, and I'm not simply calling out Behemoth here. There are a lot of roaming supers that last way too long. Like, the space magic is awesome, but I feel like, especially in PvP, Destiny needs to keep the gunplay central. And I'm less worried about grenade and melee spam than I am about roaming supers that last for 2 minutes. Like, in an 8-minute Crucible match, if you manage to get 2 supers, you're spending, like, half your time in a super.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. Like, even if we don't actually use any exaggeration here, like, with a Behemoth Titan, if you get 3 supers in an 8-minute game, you're spending... you know, you get 3 supers in a 9-minute game, let's say that. You're spending a minute and a half in super out of a 9-minute game, right? Like, that's a crazy amount of time to be spending as basically an invulnerable, super fast, super lethal, like, state of your Guardian. Like, it's just, it's not great, right? And it's not, Behemoth was the worst example, but at other points in time, like
it's
we
just
mentioned.
It's just the latest.
Yeah, Spectral Blades was terrible. Nova Warp was terrible. And they all had the same issues where they were super tanky, super mobile, and able to last for ridiculous amounts of time. And they had really high lethality of their attacks. Like, you know, Bottom Tree Striker is another one.
Yep.
That literally, like, last forever. Like, there's a huge problem with everything else. And we've said this a million times, but everything else has been nerfed and nerfed and nerfed and nerfed, but supers are the most powerful they've ever been, and it's not even close. Guns are weaker. primaries and specials. Abilities are weaker, grenades and melees, but supers really fucking strong. Yeah. Last forever. Tons of damage resistance. Like, it's this is really strange dichotomy, and I know that like they're like power fantasy, but like that power fantasy for that one person means everyone else who's not that one person has a shit time of it while that person's in their power fantasy.
And like it's only made worse, I feel like. Like, either you're in, you know, 6v6, right? At which point, like, after a few minutes of gameplay, somebody is always in a super. And 50% of the time, it's somebody on the other team. Right, so 50% of the time, sure, your team is getting to kick some butt. And the other half of the time, you're having to avoid whatever part of the map somebody is running around in a super on.
Or it rolls to where it's not just one. It's right. One super that you die to, then the second super that you die to, then the third super that you die to. And then you're far behind, which means they're building supers because they got orbs, which means very quickly there's another super. Yeah. And it's, it snowballs.
Yeah. You know, so I wouldn't mind if they want to make them super strong. That's fine with me as long as they take, you know, twice as long to bring up. You know, if we're seeing one, and maybe if you're just, like, absolutely wrecking two in a match. Okay. But it's not very difficult to get two if you use it immediately. Like, I say that, I suppose, and then there's probably somebody who's like, well, it's super hard for me to get two. And like, that's fair. But for at least half the population, getting two supers in a match is something that, you know, maybe it doesn't happen every match, but it happens. And certainly they see it happen. So, and if you are struggling to get two in a match, then you probably see other people getting two or three in a match and find it very frustrating. You know, so I feel like if they're going to be this strong, they just have to take longer. But what I'd really like to see maybe is just, I don't know, I guess I could go either way. I wouldn't mind if they stay strong. If we just see them less often. But I think for PvP balance, it's probably going to make more sense to bring them down. My personal preference is that I would be fine. I adapt. Whatever the state of the game is, I just adapt to that. So I could go either way on it. But in terms of balance, it probably makes more sense to bring the super down.
I mean, I look at it like, you know, if we're talking two options, the D1 option for supers was the supers were weaker, but they were more common, right? So you may run into three supers in a match or four supers in a match, but the supers were a lot easier to shut down. They were still strong, but they were a lot weaker than they are right now. Now, with stasis, you run into two supers in a match, but they're likely to kill you twice each time, right? Like, my thing is, I would much rather run into more supers if the supers were weaker then I would run into fewer supers if the supers are strong. Because, like, if the super is weak, then I feel like I have counterplay against it, right? So you're saying that I'm going to see a super four times in a match, but I have counterplay against it. That means maybe one or two of those times I kill the super, right? Even if it's just one time I kill the super. Right now what's happening, or, you know, what was happening before these balance changes to the behemoth, I'd see a behemoth twice a match. There's no counterplay. Like, that person, for that person, the behemoth was a win button. You press the behemoth, you're basically invincible, you're super fast, you're going to go get kills for pretty much whoever you see. So I don't like the win button mentality. Sure. I like the, you're really strong, but you're still vulnerable, and your super only takes 3.5 minutes to charge instead of taking 5 minutes to charge, right? Like, or four, I think what it was 4 minutes, right? Like, I think it was based on scales of four, and the light subclasses may still kind of be with a little bit of a difference, and now it's like 5 minutes for the Revenant or something. But, you know, regardless, talking about supers, They buffed the Warlock super.
Yeah.
So, and this is something that I hadn't even thought of. This is a really weird value that they talk about, but the Winter's Wrath projectiles, the tracking strength decays from its max value over 10 seconds now instead of 2.2 seconds. So I'm guessing what that means is when you launch a projectile, it has very strong tracking initially, and then as that projectile stays in the air and travels a further distance, the strength of the tracking that it has to a target decreases, right? That's what I think they're saying. about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's the way I read it as well.
And I think what's happening right now is it is decreasing a little over 2 seconds after you launch it. It is at its minimum tracking strength. And now they are flattening that curve. They are lengthening that curve so that it now doesn't reach its minimum tracking until 10 seconds. But where the hell are you going to find a Winter's Wrath projectile that has traveled for 10 seconds?
That's what I'm wondering. I'm thinking, I'm pretty sure if I haven't hit someone or hit close to someone within, like, say 3 seconds max, how far am I trying to throw these projectiles?
Right, because, like, even 2 seconds is, like, 2 seconds is a pretty long time for a projectile to be in an air, I feel like.
Like, am I launching across the entire map over buildings to try to catch someone? I don't know. I don't know what's happening that we need 10 seconds. Maybe it's a PvE thing.
I think what it is it's just more about the curve and it's less about the endpoint, right? Like, they don't expect these things to be in the air for 10 seconds, but putting the endpoint at 10 seconds gave them the curve they wanted over the first 2 seconds, right?
That's fair.
Because, like, right now, if it's bottoming out at 2 seconds, that means that curve is real steep. Now, if it bottoms out 10 seconds, well, the same 2 second flight path now has a much smoother tracking curve, basically, that it's following. So I think that probably is what it is, but I am interested to see, like, can you Winter's Wrath someone from all the way on the opposite side of, you know, Bannerfall or something like that? Like, can you do it? Because I'm kind of curious now.
Yeah, that's a good question. I suppose if they didn't want to raise the floor of the tracking strength, then this is a more elegant solution. Because it doesn't matter if it's 10 seconds, because it's not something that's really going to affect gameplay. But it allows them to keep the floor where it was, while, like you said, achieving a curve that's more generous to the player in actual gameplay situations in those 2 to 3 seconds.
Right.
After and launch. Then
they actually continued to buff it. Buffed the proximity detonation radius from 1.5 meters to 1.65 meters. It's, you know, as is anything with a circle, small changes make big differences, right? And it is proximity detonation, so, like, truth. That's why so often you feel like you get hit by a warlock, you know, blast that you dodged. Well, you did dodge, but it has proc stat. So it's like, you know, grenades and horseshoes.
Yeah, yep. So the thing to note there is, of course, that is radius. So it is an increase to the diameter of that detonation of 0.3 meters. So,
yeah, almost a third of a meter. And we all know that the formula that we're looking for is pi r squared right there.
There we go.
And the proximity detonation now starts at its largest and scales down to 40% over time. So what I am assuming that means, again, an assumption here, because this was something I didn't know that they did, these couple of things that they've modified here. The proximity detonation now starts at its largest and scales down. What I'm assuming that means is the longer the projectile travels in the air, the weaker the proximity detonation will be when it finally reaches a target.
Yeah, I will say that is not something that I was aware of. With Winter's Wrath, that the size of the detonation decreases over time. I would read that the same way, because there's not a whole lot of other ways to interpret that that would make sense.
Which would kind of explain why they then buffed it. They're trying to make it more useful up close. Like, it's more forgiving up close. You can shoot these things further away, but the further away the target is, the more accurate you have to be, because you're only going to end up with 40% of that proximity detonation radius at a long distance, as opposed to the full, you know, 3.3 meters. That's the diameter, not the radius. But
right.
So I think that that's the way it is. I think that's the way I'm reading it, which is interesting. Those are two things, and, like, it goes to show you how much really goes into these supers. Like, those are two things I never even thought about in terms of balancing the super. Like, changing the tracking strength decay over time, or changing the proximity detonation radius over time.
Yeah, Destiny's a complicated game. That's as we keep being reminded.
But I believe that overall, The first two are 100% buffs to this super.
Yeah.
The last one is a buff up close and a nerf further away, but I think that most players, based on how I've seen them use Winter's Wrath, are going to be okay with that. I haven't seen anybody sniping with Winter's Wrath.
Yeah, I think with the detonation radius increasing, by the time that it strikes someone, it's likely to be around the same as it was anyway for general use. You know, I feel like most of the time this is something I see used at short, short range engagement distances, maybe short to mid at most. So be very surprised if it really hurts anybody. I think that's overall a small buff to the super, which is fine. I don't think that's going to take it over the top in any way.
No, I think it'll be strong, though. I think Winter's Wrath will still be quite strong.
Yep, definitely.
They are nerfing Penumbral Blast, which is the melee. It's not a ton. They're basically bringing the base damage down from 80 to 30, which, you know, it sounds like a ton, but the strength of Penumbral Blast has always really been that it freezes you. The damage was kind of overkill. The PV damage is, of course, unchanged. Ice Flare Bolts, they're fixing a bug, and then they're just straight up improving them. So they said that there was a bug where Ice Flare Bolts would continuously try to switch between targets, right? Which would, of course, end up preventing them from actually quickly getting to a target when you need them to. So they fixed that bug. Then they increased the target acquisition range of Ice Flare Bolts by 33%, and they increased the turning speed of Ice Flare Bolts so that they can more effectively hit nearby targets. So that is going to make them pretty substantially better than they are right now, where they're not seeing a ton of use right now.
I guess we'll see if they manage to make them a thing.
So, you know, really outside of Penumbral Blast, like, you know, Shadebinder's just like straight up getting buffed. And what I'm thinking, like, even with the way all of this stuff works right now, like outside of Behemoth, outside of Revenant, if you took those two straight up out of the game, Shadebinder would be one of the strongest subclasses along with Top Tree Dawn that would exist in the game right now, right? Like, Shadebinder is strong right now in its current iteration. It's not as strong as Revenant, it's not as strong as Behemoth, but it is strong in its current iteration. They're buffing it. What that tells me is that they're not trying, that they believe that that is the new, or at least they're experimenting to see if that is the new normal. The line that they're buffing Shadebinder up to can be the new normal. If that is the case, what that means to me is that they're planning to really bring some light subclasses up.
Yeah.
Because even with these nerfs, Revenant is still going to be good. Behemoth is still going to be good. Shadebinder is getting buffed. It's going to be good. Like, these are still going to be the par subclasses for use in PvP.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think we can definitely expect to see light subclasses, even if they don't get a complete revamp to the Darkness subclass style in terms of aspects and fragments, I think we can definitely expect to see them being brought up in line with Stasis power levels. Speaking of power levels, Chaos Reach is kind of been snuck in here. They are decreasing the amount of super energy refunded when canceling Chaos Reach early. I am A-okay with this. I have been getting just torched by Chaos Reach lately. It's perhaps my own fault for playing PvP on PC, where Chaos Reach is just that much easier to use. But, I mean, damn. People be sniping.
Yeah. Chaos Reach definitely needed something to be done about it, because people were basically figuring out that you could, once you got your super, you could pretty consistently get your super, like, if you canceled it correctly, like, you know, every 30 seconds to a minute after that for the entire rest of the game. Which obviously pretty much just breaks like everything about super economy. So definitely was something that that needed to happen. I'm more thrilled about the next change. They have a couple of general stasis changes. Dustfield grenades getting a heavy nerve. Thank God. They didn't mention anything about this. They didn't mention anything about it in the state of the game, so I was freaked out that they were gonna ignore it. But they have reduced the Dustfield grenade pull from 9.5 meters to 6 meters, only for PvP. That is fantastic. What that means is what used to happen is you would see the radius of the animation of the grenade. You'd be 3.5 meters outside of that and get yanked into it. Now it seems like the pull radius matches the animation of the grenade's effect. So if you're inside of it, you'll get pulled. But if you're outside of it, you won't, which, to be fair, is the way it should have been to begin with.
Yeah. I've definitely gotten used to abusing dusk fields, but as much as I can't say that I'm thrilled, at the same time, it needed to happen. They're too strong. They had to come down. And they've also... So getting frozen in a dusk field is going to be much less common. They're going to definitely be shifted, I think, to a... I mean, I think what they probably were originally intended to be, which is a grenade that mostly just slows you down unless you are dumb enough to stand in them.
Yeah, it's a grenade that applies
debuffs. Don't take it personally if you stand in them. Because every now and then I do too. But they're reducing the slow stacks applied to players by the grenade detonation from 20 to 10. And the slow stacks applied to players on each tick of the grenade from 10 to 5. So these stack changes are PvP only. They do not apply in PvE. It'll maintain its current full strength against minions of darkness.
And there's a UI change that really should have been at the top of this list. They are no longer showing slow stacks going up to 10, and now goes up to 100 so that you can better see intervals that are fewer than 10, like, for example, the 5 that they're now doing. I think these are great changes. I think that now what you're going to be doing is you're going to be using dusk fields, maybe for a little bit of the pull, but mostly to apply the slow debuff to players, as opposed to, like you said, trapping them and freezing them. Because with the dusk fields in their current state, you could be so far away from the grenade, get pulled into it and get frozen. There's just nothing you can do about it because of how fast it is. It doesn't seem like it's going to be that way anymore. I am so happy to see these dust field grenades get nerfed. I would have also liked to have seen slow itself get touched, maybe where it didn't decrease weapon accuracy, but we'll put a pin in that. We'll save it for another day. This is a great change. I'm a little bit upset about this next one. Stasis crystals, they are reducing the shatter damage against players. It used to be 85 max per crystal, 55 minimum. Now it's 55 max per crystal, 25 minimum. That's a bummer to me because what this is it's another shatter dive nerf.
Yeah.
And secondarily, I have developed a new strategy, which I'm absolutely in love with, where when I force someone behind cover, I throw my glacier grenade behind them, and then I shoot it from a distance to shatter it, and it will kill people behind cover. And I have absolutely been loving this strategy because people just have no idea how to play against it, and it fits perfectly into my new Dead Man's Tale like loadout. This is probably going to kill that, along with killing what remained of Shatter Dive. So I'm a little bit upset about that, but, you know, like Thanos said, a worthwhile price to pay for salvation, you know, like,
wow,
it had to be done.
Going deep there. People hate to play against Shatter Dive. I guess when it's abused, it is unfun to compete against. So there we are. I'm going to be honest with you, these nerfs to the effectiveness of Glacier and Duskfield grenades have me looking at Cold Snap grenades and going, maybe.
Yeah, not so bad.
Maybe you'll be coming back out to play. I don't know.
Yeah, they also affected a couple of the Whispers. Whisper Chains, which is the one that gives you damage resistance when you stand next to a friendly crystal. In Supers, it used to give you 25% damage resistance. It now only gives you 5% damage resistance, which is how, if you've ever seen a behemoth that is entirely invulnerable, it's because they had 60% damage resistance from their super and an additional 25% from Whisper of Chains, which literally made you do no damage to them. Now they won't be able to do quite that same thing. And then Whisper of Torment, I don't even know what the bug was where you could continuously proc it standing inside of an opponent's barricade, but apparently you could. Never even heard of that bug, so... Not sure what to do. And then they also reduced how difficult the stasis fragment quests for the Crucible were. So, man, that actually ended up being a lot. We talked about that for a long time. I am so enthusiastic about these changes. I think almost across the board, it's the right direction for stasis in PvP.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'd say by and large, this is a super positive and unexpected TWAB, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing all of this go live and seeing the future of Destiny subclasses take shape.
Well, that's pretty much it for that. I did ask the podcast discussion channel in our Discord if they had any questions they'd like us to answer. I had a feeling we'd have a few minutes left over at the end of this episode, and I want to try to get you guys out a full episode. So we had a couple of questions that were asked of us. Some of them have nothing to do with Destiny at all, so maybe we'll save those for the IRL podcast that I think we probably need to do next week. I think we probably need to do it. Did we already do Empire Strikes Back, or is Empire Strikes Back the one that we need to do now?
So we need to do Strikes Back, right?
I think so. I think we did A New Hope last.
Yes, we did do A New Hope last time. We need to talk about Empire.
Which, by the way, we are
rebranding. The greatest Star Wars movie of all time.
The second greatest, behind Return of the Jedi, of course. But so, by the way, we are rebranding the IRL cast. It will now be known as Beneath Twin Suns. I've got some artwork for it and everything. It's beautiful. It's fantastic, right? So it's going to be great. And that will be hopefully sometime next week. I always enjoy doing those. So there's a couple of these questions I might have to save for that. Like Dr. Downhill asked, how many walnuts can you fit in your mouth at once? Not sure that we want to do a massive breakdown of walnuts, but there were some good questions. Ingsoc said, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on adjustments that could be made to the light subclasses to shake things up after stasis has been nerfed. Otherwise, we're right back to the old top tree Dawnblade and mid tree Nightstalker meta. Well, in the interest of time, I'm only going to pick a handful of things to talk about with light subclasses. The first one, and the nearest to my heart, is for the love of God, make Tether activate instantly. If you could just make Tether activate instantly, Nightstalker would very quickly become an extremely useful subclass. If you basically had a super that was a suppressor grenade with enhanced range that also, you know, trapped people, that's fantastic because the neutral game kit for Nightstalker is great. But the super is so bad that it drags the entire rest of the class down. I would love to see that.
Yeah. Definitely have to agree on that. I'd like to see some kind of change to Nova Bomb. I know people aren't going to agree with me, but I think Blink needs a buff. People are going to say, no, Blink shotgun meta was awful. It was horrible. We don't want to go back to it. But, damn it. It has languished for too long. And, hunters have teleporting dodges now. So, like, why can't Warlocks teleport as well? And have it not, like, be... like, it's usable right now, as long as you're not trying to be competitive. But it'd be nice to see it be just a little bit better, be just a little bit less punishing when you come out of that blink. So I'd like to see Nova Bomb's neutral game get a little bit more love on that front. And the super, you know, I don't know what they, I feel like the super just needs some kind of refresh. The Slova Bomb was neat when it first came out, but I'm kind of over it at this point. So I'm not sure exactly what I want them to do, but I'd like to see something fresh on that front.
Voidwalker was definitely a subclass that performed a lot better in D1 than it ever has in D2.
Yeah.
Outside of Nova Warp, which is kind of its own thing. I'd also like to see Defender Titan get a little bit of love. I feel like Defender Titan just across the board, all three subclasses, is just pretty underutilized right now.
That's fair.
Yeah. Gain or Gagne says, what are your guys' preferred exotic armor pairings for Breach Stasis subclass? Well, I can only speak from the experience of a Revenant right now because I have spent very little time on my Titan and almost no time at all on my Warlock because I have been enjoying everything about the Revenant kits so much, much to the chagrin of everyone who's in my lobbies. But Frosties has been pretty much it for me. I thought maybe Bakriss would take me away, but the Frosty is the ability to basically treat my abilities like they're light refresh rates or recharge rates, and constantly have grenades up, constantly have my melees up, constantly have my dodge up, and get the faster sprint. Like, I just can't say no to Frosties. Plus, it just goes with the whole stasis, aesthetic, right?
My answer is literally exactly the same. It sort of started as a joke that I just wouldn't play Titan when I first started playing Destiny because it was my friend who got me into the game. It was his favorite subclass, and so I was like, "No, I'm gonna be a hunter, and I'm never gonna play Titan." I didn't entirely keep that promise, but for some reason, I don't know what it is. Hunter, I just love. Hunter is home for me. Warlock, I really enjoy as a side project when I have time. Titan has just never been my jam. So, I got
Reality
nothing.
verbally says, what gun would you like to see get a catalyst next? What would it do? It would 100% be Bastion for me. And the catalyst would allow you to continue charging it through a double jump and give inner accuracy. That would be too broken for a catalyst. But if you're giving me, carte blanche to kind of do whatever I want, it would be that Bastion could be charged through a double jump and would have in-air accuracy. And that would basically get rid of the very last thing that I think is a weakness for Bastion and make it into all around just the slaughter machine that it deserves to be.
So I have a real answer and like not a real answer. The real answer is the last word, and my answer is that the catalyst would give you perfect in-air accuracy to go along with the perfect hip-fire accuracy, and you would just be done using other guns. The joke answer is Salvation's Grip, and the catalyst would make it worth using. I don't know how. It would just maximize all the stats and also make it actually do damage.
It would give any class Shatter Dive,
Yes.
right? As long as you have Salvation's Grip in your hand, you can Shatter Dive.
It would just launch the snowstorms that hunters throw.
Yeah,
It would just
it would
every
just use
grenade
the
would
Hunter
just be
Super.
that.
It makes you into a Revenant, no matter what you are. When you have it in your hands, it makes you into a Revenant. All right, Pewter City Gym Leader, which is a fantastic name. Says, what are your guys' thoughts on the pattern of the seasonal progression that Bungie has set up since Season of Dawn with leveling up a kiosk each time? What would you guys like to see as improvements or new seasonal progression models to change it up? So I actually don't mind the kiosk leveling thing. I like this one the least because it's time gated and you can only do a set amount per week. I don't really like that. I kind of like being able to do it on my own as I felt the need to progress. My biggest issue with it is that I have felt that almost across the board, I end up wanting to unlock the upgrades early, and I don't have them. The reason I want to unlock the upgrades early is because they help me unlock the rest of the upgrades faster, and I just kind of want to be done with it, right? And then, like, once I've actually unlocked all the upgrades, I basically stop playing the seasonal activity. And I don't know that that's a flaw with the kiosk itself. I think it's a flaw that the seasonal activities are almost inherent, like not fun to play after you've played them for a few weeks. Even Battlegrounds, which I enjoy, like after I've done every Battleground for the 20th time, like I'm really not enjoying the Battlegrounds anymore. And I think the kiosk suffers from the fact that like its focus is on doing Battlegrounds, and by the time you're done with the kiosk, you don't really want to do Battlegrounds anymore.
So, my thoughts, I think, on what I would like to see, I think similarly as you. regarding the kiosks. I'm fine with that structure, but the seasonal activity needs progression within itself on a more regular basis. So I'd like to see like a greater variety of boss mechanics. Destiny has a long and rich history of boss mechanics that are there for them to mine. And that legendary Destiny content vault is just full of boss mechanics that they can use and reuse and combine in new and novel ways. And I would love to see them just throw stuff at the wall and give us a wild variety, with the aim that perhaps it grows more difficult over the course of the season, but you still have some maybe that are, less challenging. I'd really like to see, I would just like to see more variety within the activity, and I feel like the boss fight is sort of the meat of the activity in most cases, so.
Here's what I just thought of. You do away with the seasonal activity. You apply the kiosk like leveling structure to Crucible, to Gambit, and to Strikes. And you allow the leveling of that to increase your rewards for each of those associated activities, right? So people could start focusing on bottom dollars from Gambit. They could start focusing on Stars and Shadow from Crucible. They could start focusing on, the adept weapons like Shadow Price and stuff that are dropping from Strikes. You just don't even do a seasonal activity, right? And you use these kiosks, and it could even be like a more limited form of the kiosk, and you associate them with each of the core activities. Because honestly, I think that's what it is like the seasonal activities. By the time you're done with the kiosk, you've gotten all the rewards that you want out of them, and you're bored with the seasonal activity, and there's no replayability there, right? Because you're not going after the rewards anymore, which is what the kiosk helps you to do, right? Like, the whole point of the kiosk is that it makes it easier and more efficient to get these rewards for you. But because it takes so long, and I've played Battlegrounds so much, I have every reward I want from that, and the activity itself is now kind of boring to me, which it doesn't have the boss mechanics and stuff. But Strikes, I'm going to keep running Strikes a ton. I'm now being forced to run Gambit, so I don't have a choice. But people are trying to farm Gambit for bottom dollar, right? And they're not able to do it. And then Crucible, like, I would love to see that type of kiosk system associated with the core activities that I actually do want to replay and run a bunch.
So, that was actually sort of going to be my follow-up. I wanted to give you another chance to chime in, but my follow-up was that instead of worrying so much about the seasonal stuff and how can we keep the seasonal stuff fresh, revamp the damn vendors and make them fun to interact with and give me a reason to actually want to visit them. Applying this same sort of style of leveling to Vanguard, Crucible, Gambit, Gunsmith, Trials even, if you really wanted to give people some more interactive mechanical things there, allow people, if they play enough Trials, even if they don't win, to sort of unlock various buffs that will allow them to start getting some non-adept gear. There's a lot you can do with it.
I mean, oh my god, I'm like excited about this now, and it's not going to happen, and it breaks my heart, because I'm legitimately thinking, like, what if all the XP and what if all the leveling that you're doing on these like Vanguard things, like leveling the Vanguard doesn't matter for shit right now.
No, it's
like,
meaningless.
Leveling Shaxx doesn't matter for shit. What if it did? What if every time you got a level, you could pick another thing out of your kiosk and, like, you could even reset the kiosk every season, or you could keep them for multiple seasons and just add more stuff onto them. Like,
take the artifact system. Give people a path, and they can choose their path, and they can reset it, but it costs them.
Damn, what a great idea. I'm really upset that we came up with that idea and it's so good and I don't expect us to see it all. I was just thinking, how good would that be for Trials? Like, how much replayability could you get out of Trials if you could focus your rewards and focus your earnings and Trials and something like that? And, all it took was you playing through it, but jeez, God. God, yeah. Man, that was a... Oh, man, if I was writing articles again, that'd be an article. I'm going to post something about it on Twitter tomorrow. I'm 100% doing
that. Would be a phenomenal way to allow people to actually chase the weapons they're interested in every activity. The vendors were better in Destiny 1 because you could pick your rewards from them. That's what we wanted. Now, if they're going to make us, you know, level into them and unlock some stuff in order to get the right to pick, you know, a chance at a good role, that's fine. I can live with that. Because you know what? It's fun to get a great role on a gun, whether it comes from an activity or from a slot machine in the tower. Getting a great weapon that you're going to... The fun is that you get to use it a ton after the fact, right? Where you got it from, not so relevant unless it's like, you know, maybe a super rare exotic that you've been chasing. Then you might remember the event. But I'm not going to remember where I got my God-rolled palindrome. It doesn't matter.
All right.
So, anyway...
Turned out to be a full episode. I like doing the listener questions at the end there. That's actually something I took from DCP. They do that. I mean, they do that every episode. Their listener questions are much more off the wall and less topical than ours are. But I enjoyed doing that. Maybe we'll slide some stuff in like that in the future when we think we might run into a shorter episode. But you know, as far as it goes, guys, I think that's it for episode 202. So thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.
Peace.
Peace.